When does a phenomenon become the unknown? When all attempts at understanding fail, and those who thirst for knowledge and understanding watch as research turns to ash in their mouth. As the phenomenon turns from a riddle to be solved into anomalous fascination. Hello, friends. Thank you for tuning in to episode 2 of the Anomalous Fascination podcast. First, I wanted to start off by saying thank you. Due to the amazing word of mouth from episode 1, so many incredible people were able to hear this podcast. As I mentioned before, this is a labor of love for me, and it thrills me to be able to have people to share these stories with. So anytime you tell a friend about this show, it genuinely means the world to me. Now, on to the episode. So last week, we started our episode with a what-if scenario. This week, I'd like to try something a little bit different. I'd like to start off by telling you a story. In 2012, a science teacher and former university lecturer from a small coastal village in British Columbia began noticing something. Something unusual. It was a sudden irritant that appeared seemingly from nowhere. It was beginning to really bug the man as it was persistently accosting him every day from 10 p.m. on. He noticed a few things early on. It would stop the moment he went outside, or even briefly be stopped when he'd exhaled audibly or even turned his head quickly. But then it would persist, whether in his home or in his car, whether the engine was on or off. The irritant was beginning to drive the man crazy, while meanwhile, the rest of his family had no idea what he was talking about. He started spending hours a day going through the house searching for the cause of the irritation, as he thought for sure it had to be something in the house causing it. He investigated everything in the house and had even tried driving his car miles away and turning off the ignition. And yet, it still persisted. Finally, in an effort he was sure would solve it, he shut off the power to his entire house. But not only did the irritation not stop, it actually intensified. Now you have to be asking yourself, what is this irritant? This irritant that so pursued this man? Well, the thing that was driving the man mad was a persistent, intense, and seemingly incurable hum. Finally, the man decided to do a search online. Which, I know it was 2012, but let's face it, if this is me, I'm doing a Google way before I'm shutting off the power to my entire house. He searched unusual low-frequency humming noise. He was stunned to find not only were there numerous results, including scholarly research on the matter, but the internet even had a name for this phenomenon. The worldwide hum, or simply, the hum. Imagine the relief of finding out you're not alone. Even before you read the articles, read the hypotheses, or even something approaching a solution, the weight off his shoulders had to be immeasurable. Just knowing that he's not crazy, he's not alone, and for the first time feeling that maybe, just maybe, there's hope. Let's take a stroll, shall we? Let's go backwards. Before the British Columbian scientist, before the invention of the internet, before cell phones, car phones, or even cordless phones, the first known study of this phenomenon was performed in 1973 in England. It involved 50 individuals who complained of low throbbing background noise that others were unable to hear. Sound familiar? Good. The study showed that this group heard the sound usually peaking between 30 and 40 hertz. The hum was found to only be heard during cool weather with a light breeze, often early in the morning, and the noises themselves were confined to a 6.2 mile wide area. Other than that, that was it. No more meaningful data was able to be compiled. Huh, weird. Anyways, thanks for coming, everybody. The next study, more well known, was regarding the Taos Hum in Taos, New Mexico. The study in Taos revealed that roughly 2% of the town's population heard the hum. The hum itself, however, varied more wildly between individuals here, between 32 megahertz and 80 megahertz. It's okay, I can't relate to these numbers either, but compared to 30 to 40, it's quite a jump. The study showed the hearers are able to move away from it, but at least one subject could still hear up to 30 miles away. So this has confirmed that people experience it at wildly different intensities and wildly different ranges from the town. So, anything meaningful this study gathered? The one detail they did obtain was that age does appear to be a factor, as middle-aged people were far more likely to hear it. So, that's something, right? Evidently it was something enough for the show Unsolved Mysteries, as an episode featuring the Taos Hum was featured in a 1995 episode. Yes, really. The sad thing was, despite this phenomenon going on since at least the late 60s, not many mainstream scientists are willing to even touch this, let alone perform formal studies. Evidently there have been so many alien fanatics and conspiracy theorists with their hands on this that real scientists largely avoid the topic entirely, which is so unfortunate, because so many people are suffering from its effect. In the early 2000s, however, a geoscientist named David Deming, who also heard the hum, desperately searched for a source or consistencies between cases. His was the most far-reaching study up to that point, meaning that he sourced information from multiple locations and found that many of the hypotheses proposed by people in the past do not hold up. There simply weren't any constants among all of those who heard the hum. Up to this point, people would point at various electrical sources in big cities, traffic, machinery, airplanes, etc. But none of these ideas held up under even the slightest scrutiny. Not only would none of these provide the described humming sound, but this also assumes that only people in large cities are affected, which was immediately dismissed by Deming. Just when it seemed that Deming was running out of road, our friend from British Columbia, Glenn McPherson, came onto the scene. You didn't think I forgot about him, did you? Now to briefly break from the history lesson, let's briefly discuss what exactly this hum is. The best description found for the hum is that it sounds like a truck engine idling. And I threw out some megahertz numbers and such before, but what is the hum like to people who experience it? Well, as mentioned, it varies. For many, it can start and stop suddenly. Some it goes away slowly over time, but for many others the hum is loud, constant, and can throw their entire lives into disarray. The first known documentation of the hum was in the 1960s in Bristol, England, before finally appearing in the United States in the late 1980s. Now back to McPherson. After finding the works and research by Deming, he started reading everything Deming had written, researched, compiled, etc. Deming's papers discussed four of the most common hypotheses for the hum. Number 1. Many have pointed to the electrical grid or cell phone towers. Interesting, well, except cell phone towers didn't exist in the 1960s, and any frequency from either of those would easily be blocked by a metal enclosure, which it simply didn't. Number 2. Mass hysteria. Yes, perhaps a psychological phenomenon where rumor and collective delusions lead to physical ailments, which has been known to occur throughout history. However, as shown in the example of McPherson, he had no idea anyone else had this, or that this was a phenomena. And the same thing with numerous others, who only learned about others having it after searching for it via the internet. So that one's out too. Number 3. High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, or HARP. Yes, that's right. A military facility in Alaska caused all of it. Just kidding. Evidently, this compound uses radio waves to study outer space for testing advanced communication techniques. Deming researched, but found no evidence that this could be related. But, something to consider, evidently many conspiracy theorists believe this facility is responsible for controlling the weather, and of course, mind control. So, there's that. And finally, number 4, the quote-unquote answer that Deming eventually landed on as the most likely culprit was very low frequency. VLF radio waves. Essentially, radio waves are transmitted all over the world in order to communicate with submerged submarines. It made sense. Timing lines up. It's a very low frequency. It only made sense that some would be sensitive to it. Well, McPherson quickly discovered that this hypothesis didn't have legs. After creating a large black box designed to shield out all such radio frequencies, he then found that once he entered, it was actually louder. And then another scientist, James Lynn, from the University of Illinois, go Illini, also states that his hypothesis is a non-starter, because the only way a human could hear that type of frequency is if it was pulsed, which is highly unlikely, and even if it was likely, it would not match the steady, loud, long sound people experience from the hum. McPherson has continued his research and has been presented with many theories regarding different types of urban pollution, furnaces, air ducts, mining, highways, none of which stood up to any scrutiny. So I suppose you know what I'm going to tell you then, huh? In the year this is being recorded, 2020, there is still no explanation for the hum. Nothing that even comes close, in fact. McPherson's research continues, but what a crazy world. A phenomenon once thought to be on a few countries has since become known as a worldwide phenomenon. So, is there any solace in this story of the unknown? Stay tuned after this short break to hear the end of the story. Remember when we first started and I told you how great it must have been for McPherson to go online and immediately realize that he wasn't alone and maybe there was hope? Back in 2012, where the story began, after discovering that he wasn't alone, McPherson created the World Hum Map and Database Project. This map and database is a publicly viewable and editable document which allows those victimized by the hum to anonymously submit information about their experience with the hum, and most importantly, their location. By the year 2016, over 10,000 people had marked their location and told their story. I could not find the exact figures in 2020, but I can tell you from glancing at the map, it is far more than 10,000 now. Not only has McPherson brought the hum into the forefront and provided it with a face that is scientific and helpful, rather than the mad ramblings of conspiracy theorists, but he helped tens of thousands of people across the world. In fact, he still does. I searched for him on Twitter and there he was, still grinding away to this day, with new map updates and working to ensure that the website is available in as many languages as possible. Listen, McPherson could have just gotten online, saw there was no solution, and given up, just accepting that this was his lot in life. But instead, he decided to make it his job to help, not only in the research and studies he has compiled, but with this incredible map and database. So in the end, I guess, things came full circle. Now every time someone is at their wit's end, ready to give up, and they search unusual low-frequency humming noise, they immediately see the link to this map, showing that people on 6 out of 7 continents have experienced this. Sorry, Antarctica. And for once, these previously downtrodden people can see they're not alone, and there is hope. Thank you all again so much for listening. Please check out the podcast on Twitter at AnomalyPod, and please hop on Apple Podcasts and leave a nice 5-star rating and review. It goes a long way to helping the podcast reach new audiences. The links for the music and source material is in the show notes. And most importantly, if you want to see the compiled map and database of the hum, the link is available in the show notes as well. And again, thank you for listening.